You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. I'm Joe Vicnicki for the local news department, and this is the Borough Report for Wednesday, the 31st of July. This is a rescheduled show from last week, and I'm joined in the studio today by Borough Manager Steve Giesbrecht and the Public Works Director, Chris Cotta. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Joe.
Chris, would you pull that microphone a little bit closer up to you there? Yep, there you go. So people can hear you a little bit better. Welcome both of you. This is a monthly report that we have started at the request of the Borough Assembly, and Steve has appeared on these shows along with a department head. And today we're focusing on the Public Works Department. Chris is struggling with our microphone. There we go. Let's see. How does it sound now? We got you there?
I think so.
Okay, yeah. There we go. All right, good. Sounds good. We're going to talk about the Public Works Department today and a couple different functions of it. And we'll take your phone calls at 772-3808 if we are missing a topic or you want to hear an answer on something. We'll do our best to get you an answer and inform you about the workings of the borough and what goes on in the Public Works Department. One of the most visible sides of the Public Works Department, I think, is the sanitation side of things, trash and recycling. Let's dive into there to start off, because that's how local customers and people, residents, use this side of Public Works a lot. And I think wanted to ask about the baler replacement. Is that a good place to start, Chris? What's going on there? And can you give us a status update on that project?
Sure. The baler replacement is underway. It's on track. The equipment's being built right now, and we're expecting to get it installed right in the last part of September, first part of October.
And for people who don't know, this is equipment that's up at the landfill. It basically compacts and gets trash and recyclables ready to ship out, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the old one was something like 20 years old. It had broken down a number of times and ready for a replacement.
Yes.
How was it pulling definitely. That out of there? Or did it go
we,
right?
We haven't pulled it out yet. Oh, okay. We're still using it, at least part of it. You know, we had to take the conveyor out because that had deteriorated beyond usability, but we're still using the baler itself, and that will we intend to keep that in service until just before the replacement occurs.
Is there going to be a period of time then when the new one isn't in and the old one is down, or
yes?
Okay,
I do anticipate probably several weeks. We need to be able to take the old one out and then do some cleaning and prep on the floor and on the supports that the new baler will be mounted to. And so there will probably be I'm guessing a 2 to 3 week period where we do not have a baler. And during that time, we'll be just putting the trash in open tops.
With the idea of baling it later or shipping it out like that unbaled?
We'll be shipping it out unbaled. We've been doing a little bit of that all along just to keep some pressure off the machine. As far as the regular garbage goes, it's not a problem to ship it out in open tops. The recyclables, of course, have to be baled. We can't ship those in an open container, and so we may have to just pause the program at that point if we haven't already made changes to the program at that point. We're contemplating, you know, and that's another subject, we're contemplating some changes to the recycling program at this time.
Okay, great. Yeah, well, let's talk about, Steve, you want to mention anything about the baler, or is it before we get just, into recycling?
Sure, just, you know, to add on to what Chris said, I mean, one of the challenges is, you know, we can do open tops for a period of time. You know, there's no one of the you know, limits we have is what will, you know, the transport company accept and what will the trash company accept. So, you know, we'll use open tops for as long as we can during the switchover, and then very happy to get the baler back in, a new one back in place, so that we don't run into any problems with, you know, transportation delays if our trash is flying away or whatever, that opens us up to problems. So,
right.
Anyway, we're looking forward to it.
Okay. And of course, also for people who don't know, your trash and recyclables are all shipped out of town. They're shipped south to Washington State. I think, Chris, you got a chance to even go and see where all of our junk and stuff ends up, at least on the trash side of things. Did you get a chance to tour that landfill this year? Or?
I did. I got a chance to go down to the Roosevelt landfill in Klickitat County, Washington. It's in southern Washington, on the right near the Columbia River. That's where all of our garbage goes. And in fact, all the garbage for a lot of the region goes there. It's a very large facility. They told me, depending on the year, the volume of a given year, it's either the first or second largest landfill in the country.
What does that look like? it's hard to imagine.
Big is the first word.
It stretches
word that
comes from horizon to horizon, basically. Or
yeah, it's a I believe it's something like 1,700 acre site. Wow. And there's a lot of different portions of the site. I'm actually planning to do a little bit later this summer, early in the fall, I'm going to do a presentation on it. But there's a lot of different moving parts to that thing. From the there's a privately owned rail yard that's just for trains of garbage to come in. Then they have a fleet of trucks that offload the garbage and take it up to the landfill. There's several operations that going on within the landfill that are fairly complex. There's a gas recovery and refining operation. There's a there's a mining operation that's actually mining a portion of the landfill for metals recovery. Huge number of things going on there.
Wow, interesting. Mining operation, huh?
Yeah.
And from the little I know about it, it's a good site for a landfill compared to something here locally because it's the exact opposite climate of Petersburg, Alaska, right?
Yes, very dry, very arid area, and there's a natural clay layer there, and they've also installed additional liners on top of that. So not a lot of, you know, precipitation that will cause runoff, and just the natural geography there is such that it, you know, it's kind of in a bowl, so it's not gonna you're not gonna get contaminants running, you know, down into other areas.
Okay. Does it still make sense for the borough to be shipping our stuff out of there rather than doing it locally? Or holding it locally in a landfill, or
absolutely, I think absolutely. There's, you know, landfill solutions have been looked at in the past, and it's very expensive to implement a solid waste landfill around here, and your environmental concerns are just enormous with all the rain we have and our proximity to the ocean. And it's a much better solution to ship out to a purpose-designed facility that was, you know, engineered to accept waste. One thing when I toured that area, they really sniff at the word dump. They don't like to be called a dump. They're saying, no, we are an engineered landfill facility, and I think they told me. It has something like, at its present rate of use, it has something like 87 years of capacity left.
Okay.
So
that's a few years, but not forever. So.
Not forever,
okay.
No.
And we're making more junk every day, I know. But, well, let's get into recycling. I know that's a topic people want to hear about. I did actually have a caller earlier today, wanted to ask a couple questions and sent them my way. So let's dive into the recycling program. What's the latest on recycling markets? Have things turned around in terms of markets for our recyclable materials? And is it any better than what you've said earlier this year or this winter? Have things improved?
They have not improved. In fact, the outlook at present is bleak. Some of the commodity values are the lowest they've ever been. Commingled recyclables, the value of that material is right now is $10 a ton, which is down from a high of, you know, $134. Back in, I believe, 2017. So cardboard, which has traditionally been a higher value commodity, its high value was $220 or $230 a ton. It's down to $59 a ton. Aluminum, which was a high of $1,500 a ton is now at $1,000, so still pretty valuable, but lost, you know, fully a third of its value. And so even those commodities like aluminum and cardboard that have traditionally been more valuable to recyclers are now, you know, being turned away in some instances. When I talked to our representative with Republic Services, who is, you know, that's who accepts our solid waste and recyclables, they said that there are four large companies in Seattle that have been accepting recyclable material like cardboard. Two of them have now stopped accepting cardboard, and Republic and Waste Management are the ones that are left that are taking that material. So the changes we're seeing recently are not positive, and no one knows what the outlook is going to be.
And the reason being, I've heard national reporting that the markets are just drying up for these. This product has been recycled in China, but Chinese authorities are saying we don't want it anymore. But there are no new markets being developed or new places looking for this material.
Well, I think they are actively trying to develop new markets, but meanwhile, all of the existing markets have either been closed to us, like the Chinese market, or they're just, I think the word the Republic used was flooded. They're flooded with material, and so they're only accepting the very highest quality material, and even for that material, the prices are not good.
You know, I read one article that was talking about Germany. It holds the record as the number one country that recycles everything, and then they were unpleasantly shocked when they found out that much of their single-use plastic that they thought they had been recycling was ending up in the ocean because it was going to some of these countries that were accepting it, but then running out of space and just dumping it wherever. And unfortunately, we're hearing more and more of those anecdotal stories of where, you know, particularly plastics are not finding a home, and the values on everything else is falling. As Chris said, that, you know, the very few people that are taking it are flooded with recyclables from all over the world. And in some cases, you have countries that are actually packaging the recycled material back up and sending it back to the source country. Hmm. So, as Chris said, not great news for us.
Okay, so bottom line, with those numbers you're talking about, is it costing the borough more money now to be recycling those materials at the moment rather than just throwing them in the landfill?
It definitely is. And my latest calculations are that just on a per ton basis, solid waste is costing us around $125 a ton. And recycling is at $160 a ton.
Oh, wow. That's a big difference.
And, you know, that's just the cost for disposal of the material. And then, you know, with recycling, you have to add in the costs of, you know, the third truck that we operate, O&M costs on that. And so, you know, there's definitely a cost to the program at this point, and it is more, significantly more than just disposing of garbage.
Okay. So I had someone call in earlier today. There's a supporter of the borough's recycling program and want to see it continue. One question that he had was he wondered why we aren't treating the recycling program, considering it as more of a longer-term investment in that these prices go up and down over time. And from a philosophical standpoint, can we consider the recycling program a long-term thing that may or should eventually come up, or we don't know if it will come back up or not, but it's at a down period of time? It may be a policy question for you, Steve.
Sure, it is. And I definitely appreciate it. I mean, my wife's not going to be real happy with me if we stop recycling. So it's at a personal level for me as well. The challenge is, you know, we're also looking at, you know, a rate study in sanitation, and, you know, we're trying to avoid having to raise rates. And so this is going to come down to a policy question of probably the assembly, where do they want to continue subsidizing recycling to keep it in place? Because we're a year and a half into this downturn in recycling market, give or take. And, you know, Chris and I owe the assembly a report. that says this is, you know, this is what's happening, and this is what the market, world market, looks like. So it does not look like it's going to turn around really quickly. I think Chris and I spoke, if we were to do something different in recycling, where we're not curbs, not picking up curbside, you know, we're not going to get rid of the blue cans. We'll tarp those over and save them and hope for someday that it comes back. But this is going to be a big decision that the assembly is going to have to wrestle with. Do they want us to include the cost of recycling in a future rate study and spread that out over everybody so we can keep recycling? Or do we want to go to more of a just a drop-off situation for the higher value stuff? I think this is literally going to be at the level of the assembly.
When's that rate study supposed to happen? Then that's different than a water sewer electric rate study that may happen too, right?
It's right, exactly. We're looking at all the utilities to make sure our rates are in line. Chris, I'm not sure we have that scheduled yet or not.
We don't have it scheduled yet. My intention was to undertake that rate study in the fall and probably early winter and be able to present any rate recommendations to the assembly during the budget process next year.
Yeah. Okay, for next year's budget consideration.
Again, I mean, there's some time, and I think there's definitely support on the assembly for recycling, but up to a point. If it means having to raise rates quite a bit, that'll come into play, I'm sure.
Okay, so the follow-up question, this is all the material commingled. Is there anything we can do? Can we drop out some of the lesser value stuff and make it pencil out or make it at least closer to break even if we just are recycling the high value stuff? Or does that not work, Chris?
Well, that's something our representative with Republic was going to look into. He said that a lot of smaller communities, the ones that haven't discontinued recycling, have, you know, modified their programs to try and eliminate some of the lower value material or the negative value material. And so, yeah, we are looking at that. The thing that kind of hurts us in that regard is just that we're such a small community and the volumes of material we're talking about are small, especially compared to what's generated in communities down south. So the value of our recyclable material is fairly low, looking at it from that standpoint. Plus, we have an added challenge that most of the lower 48 communities don't have, which is transportation out of here. Costs, as everyone knows, it costs a lot to transport anything in and out of Southeast Alaska. And so that cost is added on to the recycling program. It's a pretty significant factor.
And then can you take that stuff out of the waste stream and not transport it out? If you take all the cardboard, can you burn it, have another use for it? Can you take out all the aluminum or other metal and keep that in the scrap pile for the people who like to recycle that stuff? Or are there other uses to keep it out of the waste stream?
There are things we could do. We have talked about transitioning to what Steve had mentioned, just a drop-off program, which wouldn't be going out and collecting anymore, but we would still be accepting material. We could then bale the segregated recyclables, and those bales have a much higher value than commingled bales. And then we could do that until we have a container load and ship it south as what's called a mixed load. And then you get a much higher value for the stuff, and it would be probably worthwhile to do something like that if we find that there's no way to modify our commingled program and make it pencil out.
Okay. So you'd mentioned some changes potentially coming. Are you waiting for that rate study to propose those, or is it going to be sooner when you're going to be bringing that kind of discussion to the assembly?
I think it's going to be before the rate study.
Okay.
Although I can probably, you know, I'll probably have some input for the assembly on, you know, what the potential rate impact could be, because I can crunch the numbers and find out, you know, if we keep recycling and values stay low and it costs us so much to do that, you know, I can equate that to a per customer amount. And that that data will be very valuable when we do our rate study, because if we go into that rate study knowing that we want to continue to support commingled recycling, then that gets factored into the rate study and incorporated into any recommended rate changes that we have.
Okay. All right. So can you detail those proposed changes at this point, or too early, or?
It's really just been talking so far, just kind of coming up with different proposals. The most logical thing, I think, would just be to move to a drop-off program. That's what a lot of other communities in Southeast are doing. I think Juneau is the only other community in Southeast that's doing a commingled pickup, and they do charge for it. It's an additional expense to your bill. But communities that are larger than us, like Sitka and Ketchikan, are not doing commingled curbside pickup. They're doing a drop-off.
Is Juneau's municipal, or is it a private enterprise?
It's a private enterprise up there.
All right. So follow-up question from, again, the supporter of the recycling program. He wondered what he could do to help the program keep going, whether changing, you know, his habits or recycle differently or do other things that would make it a better program and make it more viable. Anything along those lines, or were you already past that point?
Well, I mean, I can jump in. This is Steve. Likely the person that is that concerned, like the gentleman, is probably already doing all the right things. But I think Chris and Carl before him put together a really good list of stuff to do on the sanitation website about, you know, making sure you don't put oily pizza boxes in and cleaning out your site. So, I mean, follow those rules as a general help. It keeps us from getting a load kicked back or penalized for. And maximizes the value, which then helps us turn that, because that all goes right back into the program. Down the road, it's going to be, you know, a lot's going to be dependent on what happens with these commodity prices and if another market opens up. Unfortunately, the United States in particular, but a lot of other countries, we're relying on some third world countries to take our trash, and they're not so willing to do that anymore. And so those markets here in the United States really didn't develop. So possibly over time that will happen. Doesn't help a local gentleman here in our town, but, you know, there is hope down the road that something will change. I tell people keep doing, you know, following those rules and guidelines that sanitation puts out and doing your best to, you know, make sure the stuff we are recycling is clean as it can be.
Okay, and then for bigger picture, would we even be having this discussion if we weren't in these budget times? I mean, is this, you are looking at cutting a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think there have been members on the assembly that have always, you know, been interested in whether this program on both sides of this issue. So I think we'd still be having the conversation, but it'd be much easier to keep recycling if it wasn't for budgetary concerns. Clearly, that's going to be, I mean, the governor has said the cuts he's already made are just getting us halfway there. So we're expecting this to be kind of a several-year process where money is cut and budgets are harder to come by. Budget money is harder to come by.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll just add that, you know, the sanitation department understands the budgetary times we're living in, and even under good times, you know, we're supposed to look at that fund as a business type enterprise. So even when the state budget doesn't look so bad, we're looking for ways to help the bottom line. And with the current budget picture being what it is, and not knowing if the governor's going to decrease other things that are important to the community, we're probably going to be looking at all of our programs, not just recycling, but you know, there's a lot of other programs we run that have a cost and an impact on the bottom line. And so we're going to be taking a good look at everything in the near future.
Well, that gives us a good transition. We won't spend the whole time on the recycling program because Chris has other functions that he's in charge of. Let's go switch to streets, which I think have been kind of impacted as well by the budget picture. Street projects, repairs, upgrades, that kind of stuff. There are a few things happening this year. Are you working, what, on Frederick Road or Cabin Creek Drive, whatever it's called? Or
we're going to be starting a resurfacing project on Frederick Drive. The 3 miles of road are largely in really poor condition, and we're going to set aside a little bit of money each budget year to do a section. I think we're going to try and do about a half mile at a time. So there was some money set aside in the current budget for I think it was $45,000.
Yes, it was.
To purchase materials and have the public works crew do the work. So we'll probably get started on that project this fall with the brushing and ditching and kind of the roadside preparation, and then we'll be planning to do the actual resurfacing next spring.
Okay. And that's starting at Sandy Beach and heading out, or what?
I don't think so. I think okay. We're going to be starting probably just past the City Creek Bridge.
Okay.
And that stretch there where there's actually quite a few homes, you know, along that. There's one stretch that's just really badly deteriorated. So I think we're going to do the worst section first.
Okay.
And then try to maybe come back and do the first section and then go on from there.
I know I was running on that road this winter, and there was a hole in the road from a washout, it looked like, at some point. Even had a tree stuck in it to warn people not to drive in that hole, which makes me think there's some structural problems there with that road.
Yeah, the biggest problem it has is just in many places the surfacing has gone away, and so you've got a larger rock coming up through the road, and that makes it very hard to grade the road and maintain it, and so you get potholes, and it's, like I say, it's very hard to fix when you can't grade it, and so our plan is to basically restore that gradable surface to take away whatever fines, you know, and sand has accumulated on the surface, and then put some fresh, smaller rock on top so that we can shape it and grade it as needed.
Is that the only street project going on, or is there other work?
We don't have anything major planned. We're right now we're kind of starting on a street inventory, and we'll be putting together a master plan, if you will, in the next few months, and that will probably determine what sort of larger projects we target in the future. Our road funding, our road maintenance funding program is really weak, and we've been depending largely on federal funding for...
Is that the Secure Rural Schools money that yes. pays for it, which isn't a big yeah. chunk of payment every year, I don't think, for the roads part of it, I don't think.
No, it's been, what, about $80,000? A year
in that neighborhood, and it's an uncertain source. And to add to it, it's you know one of the things about Chris mentioned the road inventory. You know, we've got to figure out and provide that to the assembly. You know, what are the bare minimums? Here's what a maintenance budget looks like. Here's what an improvement budget looks like. And because number one, not everybody understands how expensive the road process is. And so we've got to do a better job making sure the assembly and therefore the community understands how expensive these road projects are. And then as a group, we've got to figure out how to fund it. And I really don't have an answer right now. Secure Rural Schools is not going to be the long-term answer. General fund's hurting, which is generally where that money would come from, would be from property taxes. There's not enough money there to do roads as well as everything else. So we're going to have to get inventive and have a kind of a community conversation about it and figure out what does everybody want. I mean, suppose we could go back to all dirt streets, but you know, going backwards is not a great solution either.
So, yeah. Take that solution, for instance, that makes other problems though, right? Those are much harder to plow, I imagine.
Yeah.
Harder to plow, harder to maintain maybe. People have issues with dust more, so our lignosite budget goes up.
Dirt streets are very labor intensive, and that, you know, your surface is constantly deteriorating on you. You know, with pavement, you can get some pavement down, and then you know it's good for a number of years. You have to, you know, wash it in the summer to keep the dust off it, and it still has to be plowed like anything else. But you don't have that constant, you know, erosion every time it rains. You're losing a surface material, and then every time you sand in the winter, you're putting fines into the road, which causes a degradation of the road surface. And so, yeah, very labor intensive, and of course, dust control. You know, there's another thing with dirt streets that you don't have to contend with on paved streets nearly as much. So, it's our paved streets are the folks that live on paved streets and use the paved streets around here really, really like that, and we'd love to be able to do more, but we just don't know. You know, we're going to probably have a challenge just to keep the streets we have paved, to keep them paved and not have to go back to a different type of surfacing.
Are there no more federal transportation grant money out there like there have been in the past, or big program, I guess?
Nothing that I've come across yet, Joe. Yeah. I mean, again, that's part of keeping an eye open. We've been able to take advantage of a couple of state projects that, you know, provided big paving jobs and, more importantly, paid for getting the asphalt plant to town so that all that mobilization cost that it takes to pay somebody to bring their plant here kind of goes away a little bit. You know, the state, with the condition it's in, is not going to be doing any big road projects in Petersburg. So, you know, the cost falls on all of us, and I think, what do we estimate, 100,000, 150,000 mobilization? It was a pretty sizable number.
Yeah, years ago it was 100,000 just to mob and demob an asphalt plant.
So that's just to get it here. That doesn't include any work.
Yeah.
So where's that, you know, where's the money going to come from to not only get a plant here, but then have enough money set aside to make it worthwhile to bring the plant here and do stuff. So it's going to be a tough conversation.
Okay. Speaking of plowing, the Borough Assembly had kind of a discussion in the past few months during budget time about streets to plow and ones not to plow. Is that something you're still looking at with these tough budget times? Are you looking into whether the borough should continue plowing non-borough roads within Service Area 1 and outside Service Area 1? Where are you at with that discussion, Chris?
Well, I'm, as I say, working on a roads inventory. Part of that project is to determine the ownership of the various roads that lie within Service Area 1, and also, you know, any roads that we have maintained that are outside Service Area 1. There's the Papke's plowing thing has kind of gone back and forth, and they, at present, there's $10,000 in the current budget to pay for plowing at Papke's, and we are probably going to just do a request for proposals and hire a contractor to do that. So the whole thing is kind of an ongoing conversation. I don't know that we've landed on anything permanent yet.
Okay.
I would agree. It starts with the road inventory. You know, sounds kind of silly trying to necessarily know whether we own a street or not, but some of this stuff was done a long time ago, long before Chris or I were here, and we've got to go through the process of making sure before we say we're not going to plow a street anymore because it's yours or private, that we're actually correct. So there's some research that goes into that. And when we're done, we'll provide a report to the Assembly that says, here's the private roads we're currently plowing, here's the private roads we're not plowing, here's the ones we're doing snow removal or road maintenance or whatever. And we'll try to outline some of those costs to the Assembly. This is what each of those roads are costing us on an annualized basis. And, you know, the Assembly's going to have to weigh in and tell us, do they want us to keep doing it? And what set of rules should we use in Public Works to operate in the future by?
Okay. Had a couple of winters of not huge snowfall amounts. Have you seen improvement in the bottom line there if you have to plow a little bit less? Or?
Well, we've had, you know, if you have less snow doesn't necessarily mean you have less maintenance. You know, we've had a couple winters where we had lots and lots of ice, and so that's pretty labor intensive too. You know, last winter wasn't too bad. We ended up coming out of the winter with a little bit of sand left over, and so, you know, that helps us this year. We may not buy as much sand as we did last year, and you know, it does help you out a little bit with your overtime budget, and so, yeah, and it varies, you know, it can vary greatly year to year, and so we obviously try to be ready for whatever the winter is going to bring. And sometimes we get a break and we have some materials left over, and sometimes we don't.
And I think so. Last winter you started with a de-icing solution that on borough streets, this is a similar solution to what the state has used on state roads in the past.
Yeah, we did a little bit of testing with mag chloride. It was very limited, but we liked what we saw, and so we're going to expand that a little bit more, I think, this winter. We're probably not going to go do every street every time, but we're going to definitely make the test program larger, if you will, and just see if it's something we want to keep going with and incorporate it into our permanent snow control, ice control program.
Okay. All right. What other topics in public works should we cover? Everything else running pretty smoothly. Any big problems in the motor pool, replacing vehicles on that side of things, or?
Not really. We've got several, I think, 3 vehicle replacements coming up this year. A water truck, which was actually budgeted last year, and just the length of time it's going to take to get that vehicle, we felt like we should, carry that over. And then there's a couple smaller, like, pickup-type trucks that we're replacing. So nothing, not any major action in the motor pool.
Okay. And then back to sanitation, a couple of ones I didn't mention. The salvage program up at the landfill, is that going well? The hazardous waste collection that happened this past spring, everything like that. Are those programs going to continue, I guess, in these days of budget cutting?
Well, we're going to be looking at them.
Yeah.
Like I say, everything we do, all the programs that we have, we're going to take a look and see, you know, what's the cost and benefit of each. You know, the hazardous waste collection, we've budgeted $30,000 a year for a long time for that. Usually we end up at less than that. Just being able to get that material out of the trash stream and keep it out of the creeks and the yards and, so that I could see that program continuing because it's almost a safety thing. You know, you keep that hazardous stuff in special containers where it belongs and not out in the environment. Mm-hmm.
Scrap metal and recycling.
The salvage program is really working well. We had about 550 some permits sold, and the current version of the program, which is a $10 fee to salvage for the day per day, seems to be working out just fine and allowing members of the community to come in and get material that would otherwise either get, you know, disposed of or burned up or we're happy with how that's going.
Okay. And then the voucher program, that's still continuing on, right?
Yeah, and that's one of the ones that we're really going to have to take a hard look at, because it's a great deal for folks, especially lower income folks who might not be able to pay full price to dispose of a lot of things. But there is a definite cost to it. There's no such thing as a free lunch there, you know. So we make folks a great deal on a certain amount of, you know, baler waste, landfill waste, and tires and a junk car. That in turn, we still have to pay to dispose of those things in a lot of cases. So there's a cost to the sanitation department for that, and we'll be taking a look at that just to get a better idea of how much it's costing us and see if that's something we want to keep going with. It's a popular program, so I would anticipate if we wanted to change it or eliminate it that we'd probably get some public feedback on that.
Imagine so, yeah. Okay. All right. Steve, anything else from your standpoint, Public Works?
No, just congratulations to a couple of employees that retired in Don Duke and Ron Ware. And
long-time employees, right?
Long-time employees. Yeah, right. And equal congratulations to the folks that have taken their places and moved up. And, you know, and Martin and Aaron. And so we're thrilled. And I think it's a good department. They're going to do well.
Okay. All right. Thanks for coming in today, guys. And we'll see you, talk to you again in about a month's time with our next borough report. Coming up next, we're going to have some weather and messages and street beat music.